nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Enjoy the show.
Okay, so today we'll continue where we had left off, like before the break. And let me just briefly remind you what we were doing. Because in terms of the big picture, as you know, that when you want to describe current flow through any structure, the important quantity that you need is this density of states. And once you have the density of states, we discussed last month how one can go about calculating current voltage characteristics and other quantities of interest. Now what we are talking about this month is, like, how do you get the density of states? And the starting point for calculating density of states from a microscopic theory is this Schrodinger equation, as we have discussed. And this Schrodinger equation, of course, is basically it's a differential equation, you know, involving this wave function, and there's this differential operator. And as we discussed before the break, one of the first steps is to convert this Schrodinger equation, this differential equation, into a matrix equation. I mean, any numerical method for calculating energy levels or solving the Schrodinger equation usually would involve turning it into a matrix equation. And the way this is done is you write the function that you're trying to determine, this wave function. You expand it in terms of what are called the basis functions. So these are all known functions. This is a set of functions that you know. Like in the case of, say, a Fourier expansion, it could be the exponential ik x type of functions, or it could be sine kx and cosine kx, or sometimes people use Gaussian functions. So these are a known set of functions, and you expand what you're trying to determine in terms of that known set. And the function then is described by the coefficients of this expansion. And so one can then write this function simply in terms of these numbers, which if you arrange in a column, it becomes a column vector. And as we have discussed before, this then turns that differential equation into a matrix equation like this, where instead of a function, you have a column vector, and instead of a differential operator, you have this matrix. And in general, you have something that looks like this, E S, that's this overlap matrix, times phi equals H phi. And as we have discussed, there's this ab initio methods, and then there are what are called first principles methods, and then there are the semi-empirical methods. In the first principles methods, you start from Schrodinger equation and actually calculate the elements of this matrix, whereas what is much more commonly used are the semi-empirical methods, where these elements, the elements of this matrix, are known from experiments and various theoretical calculations. And you kind of assume those matrix elements and then go on from there. That's kind of what we'll be doing in this course. So let's say we want to talk about special material like, say, graphene, which is made up of carbon atoms. So we won't really start from a Schrodinger equation, which has the information about what carbon potentials look like and so on. Instead, we'll say, well, what are these matrix elements H? What are they known to be given the carbon, given carbon atoms arranged in a certain way at a certain distance from each other? So we usually, so people in the semi-empirical method, they would usually start from this matrix equation. And often it is assumed that this matrix is just an identity matrix, in which case you can drop it. And so the equation looks like E phi equals H phi. And that's what we'll generally be doing. That's what we'll be discussing. Although the principle of band structure that I want to talk about today and we'll be finishing up next day, that could be applied even if this S were not an identity matrix. But for this discussion, let's assume this is an identity matrix. Okay. Now, question is, what is then the size of this matrix? Because we have to solve this matrix equation. And of course, how difficult or easy it is often depends on the size of the matrix. And the point is, the size of the matrix is determined by how many basis functions one needs. And as we have discussed, these basis functions are a little bit like grid points, that we are trying to describe this device and you have a set of grid points. And more generally, you have this idea of a set of basis functions. And typically for a large solid, you could easily have thousands of basis functions so that these matrices could easily be 1,000 by 1,000, like a million by million, enormous matrices, which means if you were to try and find its eigenvalues on a computer, it could be a pretty sizable problem. And the principle of band structure that we started discussing right before the break, the principle of band structure basically allows us to write down the eigenvalues of this matrix, even though it is huge. We can write it down almost analytically on the blackboard without really going to a computer. And what allows us to do that is we make use of the periodicity of this solid. That is, the idea that usually the solids we are dealing with have atoms that are arranged in a periodic fashion. Because if they were not periodic, if it was like an amorphous solid, then there would be no simple way of writing down the eigenvalues. But if you assume that it's periodic, then you can write it down, and that essentially is the principle of band structure. So for example, last day the case we went through involved a one-dimensional lattice, you know, something like this, where you had atoms that was arranged along a 1D chain, and they were separated by some distance, say A. And what we argued was, if you actually looked at this H matrix, it would look something like, you know, some quantity on the diagonal and something on the upper diagonal, something on the lower diagonal. Now, every element on the diagonal must be the same. Why? Because whether on this chain, whether you're here or here or here, it should get, because it's a periodic solid, every atom looks the same, no matter where you are. And we also assume periodic boundary condition, so that even when you get to the ends, it's really like a ring. And even the end atoms look exactly the same as any atom in between. And so, whether you're here or here or here, the diagonal elements should be exactly the same. And the same is true of an element like this. You know, this is a 1, 2, 3, 4. So when you're writing this, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. So this T is what connects this second atom to the first atom. So it's this connection. Whereas this T connects the third atom to the second atom, which is this connection. And the point is, whether you're here or here, it's the same periodic solid. They all look the same. And so the kind of matrices we encounter in periodic solids have this property that essentially every line looks the same. And it's just shifted over, right? And so we could represent it on that picture we have up here as like epsilon on the diagonal, T connecting to the left, and T connecting to the right. And what we discussed last day was that if you were trying to solve this equation, this matrix equation, which essentially is a collection of algebraic equations. So if there are n atoms, these are like n This is like an n by n matrix, and what you have is a collection of n algebraic equations, which would look something like this. E, phi 1, phi 2, etc. up to phi n is equal to like this. So in matrix form, that's what the equation would look like. And of course, for this periodic boundary conditions, we put a T here and a T here too, that we discussed last day. And this is basically a collection of n algebraic equations. So for example, the second equation would be E phi 2 is equal to T phi 1 plus epsilon phi 2 plus T phi 3, and so on. You could write this all out. And ordinarily, you'd say, well, I have to go to a computer to solve this. But as we discussed last day, because each line looks the same, the solution to this can be written down without going to a computer. And the solution that we discussed last day is simply this, that phi at the nth point is equal to some constant times e to the power I n k a, where k is any number. And what we discussed is, regardless of what k is, this solution will satisfy this entire set of equations as long as, and there would be a separate energy eigenvalue E corresponding to each value of K. And these are the things we went through last day. Now, what I want to do today for the rest of the class is show how this result is generalized to more than one dimension, like two dimensions or three dimensions. Also, the result we'll obtain today is something you could apply even if this matrix had non-zero diagonal elements, say, for the second one. In other words, right now here we have assumed that every point connects only to the one to the left or one to the right. In general, you could have a connection to, like, two atoms to the right and two atoms to the left, for example. So you could have a T prime running to the next one. The general relation we'll obtain today would work no matter what. It doesn't matter whether how many elements you have here. You could have next nearest neighbor interactions just as well. The principle would still be the same. The main point is every row must look exactly the same. As long as that is true, the principle we'll be deriving today, that should work. Now, once you go to something more complicated than a linear chain, it's actually somewhat awkward to try to write down this matrix. Because, you see, if you had, let's say, a square lattice, and you have connections from every point to the nearest neighbor. So now the thing is, you have nearest neighbors in all four places. So if you were to number these, let's say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Now you see the 0.5 is connected to 4, 6, which is like the next one over and the next one on each side. But then it's also connected to 2 and 8, which are not quite the next one. It's like somewhere further down. And so if I actually had to write this matrix, the bookkeeping and all that can get pretty complicated. On the other hand, just to visualize this, I could just say, well, you know, I could just write epsilon here, T, 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 T. And of course, all four don't have to be equal. They could have been different. But let's assume they're all equal for the moment. And if I just draw this picture, I essentially have the basic idea. That is, point is, wherever you go, it is connected by T to the next nearest neighbor, left, right, up, or down. But if I had to actually write out the matrix, it takes much longer to figure out, you know, how to do the bookkeeping, where the non-zero elements will be, and so on. And so in general, today, I really won't be writing the matrix itself. You know, for a 1D chain, it's good, you can write it out. But what we'll do in order to generalize this, I won't really write the matrix. Instead, we'll just visualize it this way and try to work from there. Now, similarly, this equation, instead of writing out the matrix, let's write it like in terms of the components of phi. So we can write E phi n. That's the nth component of phi times E is equal to the nth component of H phi. And the way you write the nth component of H phi, you know, based on the rules for matrix multiplication, goes as summation over m h n m times phi m. Because that's basically the rule for multiplying matrices. I've got h and phi, so what I'm supposed to do is h n m phi m sum over m, and then what I get is the nth element of h phi. So this really is the same as the equation on top. I mean, this is kind of in matrix notation. This is in terms of individual components. But those are really the same equation. Right? And this is just more convenient to work from. So this is what we'll be using today. Okay. And, of course, if I had gone in and then started writing phi 1, phi 2, phi 3, etc., then it would have looked something like this, like as we had written before. Now, the general principle of band structure in this case is that the solution can be written as, you know, instead of what we had before, you know, this is what we had for the 1D solid. The more general version that I want to write down today is the following. It goes like this. It's phi n is equal to phi 0 times exponential I k dot dn, where k now, you see here k was a number. Now we have k is a vector. Vector, if you're talking about a two-dimensional solid, it's a vector with two components, x and y. There's a kx and a ky. Or if it's three-dimensional, then you'd have a kx, ky, and a kz. Okay. And what's this dn? Well, that's the position vector of the nth element. So for example, if we think of this 2D solid, so let's call this the point n. So what is dn? Well, it's the position vector for that point, wherever that is. So you choose any origin you want, and you draw a vector from the origin up to the point of interest, and that's what you'd call dn. Now, I might say, well, how do I choose my origin? I could put it any place. Wouldn't the answers all change? Well, what you'll see in a minute is the final eigenvalues that we'll write down, that won't change at all. So you're free to choose your origin anywhere, although it's not evident looking at this stage, but it'll become clearer. Okay. So let me use this ansatz then and go back to our equation here. So let me just substitute this in here. So what you get then is the following. E, instead of phi n, I put this in. And instead of phi m on the other side, we'll put in it. So all I've done is we've made this ansatz for the wave function, and we substitute it into our original matrix equations. Okay. Now, phi 0 is a number that just I can cancel from both sides, and this exponential ik dot dn I could take over to that side, so I can write e is equal to sum over m h and m e to the power I k dot dm minus dn. Okay. And this is it. This is the basic result that allows us to calculate all the energy eigenvalues. So the way this would work is, you know, for once you are given this H and M, you just choose a particular point N and perform this summation. And I think this will get clearer in the next few minutes as we go through a couple of examples. But the basic result I want to stress is just this. And the principle of band structure, there's actually one more sophistication that we need to handle band structure in general, and that's what we'll be doing in the next class. Right? But apart from that, this really is the basic result. So, in fact, let me write that out here so that you have this. So let me write this here. So where we started from is E phi n equals summation over m h and m phi m. And then we make this ansatz, and the final result you get is that E of k is equal to sum over m h and m exponential I k dot dm minus dn. This is it. Okay, now what I want to show you first is how we would apply this to our old result, which means the case where we have just a 1D chain, like what we did before the break. And we'll get the same answer as before, except that now it will be a whole lot faster. We'll just start from here and just apply it and see how to get it. And then we'll do something more complicated where, you know, we couldn't have done the way we had done it before the break. And this, of course, is the general thing that allows you to handle any lattice, 2D lattice, 3D lattice, nearest neighbor interaction, next nearest neighbor interaction, doesn't matter. This is the general principle. Okay? So let me write that up here. So we'll start with then the 1D example. So I've got a 1D solid where the diagonal elements are epsilon and the connection to the left is T and the connection to the right is also T. So it's T on either side and then there's epsilon on the diagonal. And let's say this is the point N. And what we want to do is perform this summation, and what I claim is, once I've done this summation, I have E of k. Now, since this is 1D, I don't need to put this vector sign on k. I'll just write it as an ordinary number. So what you get then is E of k is equal to, and I have to do this summation. Now, the question is, how many terms do I need in this summation? Now, in principle, of course, the sum over m goes on forever. So if I stand at n, m should be equal to n, n minus 1, n plus 1, n minus 2, n plus 2, all, and it just goes on. But in practice, of course, hnm is 0 if you go too far away from n. So in other words, if n is here, then the only terms which will give you a non-zero answer is when m is equal to n, or when m is n minus 1, or when m is n plus 1. And so basically you'll have three terms in this summation. Now, if you had a next nearest neighbor model where you also had connections to the next one over, then you could have picked up a fifth, another term from this side, another one from this side, so you'd have five terms. But the point is, this is the general expression. You can handle as many terms as you want. Now, so let's just see what happens when you do this nearest neighbor model like we're talking about. Okay. So if I put M is equal to N on this, then HN, what you get is HNN, which is epsilon. And what about the phase factor? Well, the phase factor is just zero because M is equal to N. So exponential I times zero, that's just one. So you get epsilon. Now let's try to do the M is equal to N plus one. So now we'll get a T here. That's HNM is equal to T. And this phase factor will be DM minus DN. And this is where it's useful to remember that, you see, if you have two points, M and N, and your origin is someplace here, and you want DM minus DN. So this is DM, that's DN. And you want to find DM minus DN. Then the answer is, it's really this vector. This you can try out, it's from the laws of vector addition. This minus this is actually that, because minus this really means something like this vector, and so it's sort of like this vector plus this vector, which is that one. So what we have up here in the exponent, that's really the vector that points from N towards M, right? And which is kind of reassuring, because what that means is what you are calculating does not depend on where I put the origin. I could have put it anywhere. But I was still looking at that vector, really. Okay. So that's the vector we really need. So in this context, then, when we write when M is equal to N plus 1, you're really talking about that vector. And this is the positive x direction. So k dot that vector, what it means is, it's like e to the power I k a, because the magnitude of that vector is this distance a, and the direction is positive x. Similarly, we have one more term, and that is when you go to n minus 1. And for that, again, we pick up another t, but now we are looking at the vector that points this way to the left, which is in the negative x direction, and since that's like in a k dot, that vector then becomes exponential minus ika. And then as we did last time, we combined the two phase factors, the exponential plus ix and the exponential minus ix, and you can write it as 2 cosine kx. So it's like epsilon plus 2t cosine ka. That's it. So this is exactly the result we had before. And what I'm just showing you is that this is, follows very smoothly, very easily, from this general expression that we now have. Okay. Okay. So now let's do something a little more difficult. So it's something like the square lattice. That means you have a lattice in two dimensions, x and y. They're equally spaced. So let me draw that lattice. If something like this. And so you're standing at the point N. Now, one thing I want to stress before I go on also is that, you see, when I'm performing this summation, I sum over all M. But I choose a particular n and then do my summation. So in other words, I have this lattice with many, many points. And I stand at a particular point n. And we did this summation. Now, you might say, well, but how do I know where to stand? I mean, why couldn't I have stood somewhere here and done this summation? And the answer is, yes, in principle, you could choose any n you want. But because the solid is periodic, because every atom in that solid is essentially in the same environment, so if you stand here and look around you and perform that summation, you'll get exactly the same answer as if you go here, stand here, and look around you and do that summation. And it is this fact that really allows you to apply this principle of band structure that I mentioned. Because if you are trying to deal with an amorphous solid where this point was different from that point, then you could not use this principle. You'd get totally different set of eigenvalues, set different energy values, depending on where you stand and do the summation. So obviously it wouldn't be working, this method. You'd have to actually go to a computer. But because every point is the same, you can stand anywhere, it doesn't matter. The environment around it is the same. And that applies more generally. When you go to two dimensions, it's a large two-dimensional solid, you can stand anywhere you want and do the summation. Okay, so let's say we're standing here, and what we have is this nearest neighbor model where the diagonal element is epsilon and all the nearest neighbor connections are T. So what is the EK relation? Now, again, the basic idea is we have to do that summation. And when I do that summation, question is how many non-zero terms will I have? Well, one non-zero term is when m is equal to n. So that's always there. That's the diagonal element. And then I have one term for this, one term for that, one term for that, and one term for that. So 4 plus 1. So overall, we got 5 terms in the summation. That's what you have to write out. So you can write E of k then is equal to the diagonal element, that's epsilon. Now, any phase factors associated with it? No, because for the diagonal element, n is equal to m. So in fact, let me write that equation up here so I don't have to keep pointing there. So you can just see it right here. So we are trying to do this summation. So let me write it here. Right. So that's the summation we are trying to do. And you've written the first one with m equal to n. Next, let's write m equal to, let's say here. Let's put it on the right, that point. So hnm, that's t. Question is, what's the phase factor? What is this ik dot dn minus dm? I reversed the n and the m. That should be dm minus dn. And as you know, that dm minus dn really means this vector, the one that points from n towards m. And if we define our axes as x in this direction and y in this direction, then, as you can see, that vector is really a along x. And so the phase factor will be e to the power I k dot a along x. Okay? That's the dm minus dn. And if we write k as, you know, having an x component kx and a y component ky, then as you can see, k dot x taking its dot product with a unit vector in the x direction, you see, simply gives me the x component of k. Why? Because x dot x is 1, y dot x is 0. So what I get is just kx. So this, what I've written here as k dot ax, it really means kx times a. So let me do that. So that's one term, and we got three more to go. So let's write those out. So m, let's put it here. You know, we have done m right on n. We put it to the right. Now let's put it on top, and then we'll bring it to the left, and then we'll bring it to the below it. Okay. Now, when you put it up there, then we are looking at this vector. That's the dm minus dn, which is a along y. So you could write t e to the power I k dot a, but along y. And of course, k dot y, that's really just the y component of k. So you could write e to the power I k y a. And there'll be two more terms then, one for the left and one for the one below. And as you can guess, in this case, instead of this vector, you'll have that vector, which will give you, instead of plus kxa, it will now give you a minus kxa. And similarly, this one, instead of plus kya, will now give you a minus kya. So what we'll end up having is two more terms that look like this. And now you can combine those two terms. I'm sorry, those two terms, because it's a plus ikxa and a minus ikxa. And similarly, you can combine these two and write cosines. So you'd end up with something like this. So this would then be the EK relationship. Previously, you could just plot E versus K. Now it's like E is a function of KX and KY. So it gets a little harder to visualize because, you know, it's like a three-dimensional plot. That is, you could write, you could draw something like a KX-KY plane. Now, 1D solid, you had just one K component, and you could plot E versus K. Now, K itself has two components, KX and KY, and it's like at every point in here, there's a corresponding energy eigenvalue. And so to visualize this, you need kind of a three-dimensional plot. Or sometimes people draw equal energy contours on this. At what points in KX and KY have the same energy, for example? So this visualization gets a little harder, and you may want to, sometimes people say, well, let's just plot the E versus KX along this line. That is, put KY equal to 0 and see how it changes along that line. Or how does it change along that line? Or how does it change along that line? So on. Okay. But the function itself then, we have it right here. And this is just, as I said, obtained by applying this basic result. This is this principle of band structure, that given any HNM, once you know the structure of the H matrix, you can easily calculate this. Now, let me just show you one more example here, and just to show that, you know, you can do more complicated things with this, and that is, supposing in addition to having nearest neighbor couplings, like we have talked about, we had couplings to the next nearest neighbor, something like this. You know, I'm going to call that T prime. So we have this T, which is the coupling to the nearest neighbor. And let's say you have a coupling T prime to the next nearest neighbor along the diagonal. So now when I try to do this summation, I'll, of course, have the five terms I had before. the one with n, m equal to n, then to the right, top, left, and below. We'll have all those. And that we have done already. We got that. But then we'll now have four extra terms corresponding to having an m here, 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 and here. Right? What that means is the actual EK relationship will be this plus something else, which comes from those four extra terms. So how would you write those four extra terms? Let me just show you. It's a little harder. The algebra is a little harder. The principle is the same. We're still working from here. Okay. So let's try to write just those four extra terms. Just like the EK relation is, you know, whatever we have got before, which I'm not repeating, and then I'm now trying to write the extra stuff. Okay, so let's look at this one, for example. So how do I write this? Well, this is point is n, that point is m. And what you have to do is write that phase factor. I mean, the magnitude is t prime. The phase factor is e to the power I k dot dm minus dn, which is this vector. So the question is, how do I write that vector? Well, that vector is a along x plus a along y. See? So this is a, and the sum of those vectors is this. So what you have up here then is ax plus ay, for example. Now, similarly, if you had to write this one, it would look like e to the power I k dot. Now we want this vector, which has a positive y component, but it has a negative x component. So you write k dot minus ax plus ay. Next you write t prime exponential I k dot. And now we are going to this vector. And this has an x and a y that are both negative. And so you write e to the power I k dot minus ax minus ay. And finally, you have plus t prime bar I k dot is the positive x and the negative y. So those would be the four terms. Now, this also you could simplify a little bit. It takes a little more algebra. Let me just show you anyway. It works something like this. Those extra four terms you could write as t prime times e to the power I kx a plus e to the power minus I kx a times write it here. What I claim is that these four terms, you know, could be kind of factorized. It could be written as the product of two factors. And the way you see that is, well, if you have these two terms here multiplying these two terms, if you multiplied it out, you'd get four terms. The first term would be this times this, which would be exponential I kx a plus ky a, which is basically what this is. As you know, this k dot x, that's kx, k dot y, that's ky. So it's really kxa plus kya. That's what this term is. That's what this first one will give you. Similarly, the next one is like minus kxa plus kya. So that's what you get when you multiply this term with that term. And so on. And so you can check that you'll get the third term and the fourth term also when you multiply those out. So these four terms then can be written the way I've written them here. And since this is a cosine, that's a cosine, you'll end up with 4t prime cosine kxa cosine kya. And this term then is like in addition to what we had before. Remember, when we're trying to find the EK relationship in the square lattice, we took the nearest neighbors, etc., and we got a result, which was, if you remember, epsilon plus 2t cosine kx A plus 2t cosine ky A. This is what we had got before when we had just considered the nearest neighbors. And now we have added the extra four terms, and that gets you a 4t prime cosine kx A times cosine ky A. So that would then be the EK relationship for a square lattice with nearest neighbor coupling T and next nearest neighbor coupling T prime. So the overall then, what we are trying to do is develop this principle of band structure, which, as I mentioned, is an extremely useful principle, and it allows you to write down the energy eigenvalues for a periodic solid. And the basic principle that we have obtained is kind of summarized here, that if you have this H matrix with N, M, those are the atomic points, these are the individual unit cells, then if you do this summation, you stand at any point N, and you do this summation, you'll get the EK relation. And of course, the periodicity kind of ensures that it doesn't matter which N you stand at. No matter where you stand, you'll get the same answer when you do this summation. And this is a perfectly general result you could apply to 1D solids, 2D solids, 3D solids. If we went to 3D, then the K itself would be a three-dimensional vector. It gets much harder to visualize because now you have Kx, Ky, Kz. But the principle is still the same. This is what you'd use to calculate the EK relation in general. Now, there's one element that we haven't discussed so far, and that is what we'll be talking about in the next lecture. And that would then complete the full story of this band structure. That is, in order to handle any real solid, there is one more thing we need. And that is, so far what we have been assuming is that if you look at one of these points, one of these atoms, that's like the unit cell, we are assuming that there is only one basis function on each unit cell. But in general, you see, each unit cell could have multiple basis functions. And because the unit cell is defined by the basic periodic unit, the unit that you can repeat over and over and form the entire solid. But there is no reason why you should have only one basis function for that unit cell. Like, for example, for this atom, you could have a s orbital and a p orbital, which are used as basis functions. Here also, you could have s and p, etc. So you could have multiple basis functions per unit cell, and that requires a certain generalization of this principle. And that is what we'll be doing in the next class, and which will then complete this principle of band structure. Okay. But today, the basics end result is what's up here. That's it. So let me stop here today, and we'll continue on Friday.